And I've been reading some of the quotes on the media today, you know, which have been horrendous about the sporting science medicine team at Manchester United. But I really don't think that they would have made that decision. They would have led the decision. So there would have been a lot of discussion, a lot of toing and froing, you know. This might have been going on. This low back pain might have been going on for a while, and. In football, there's a very low tolerance for players playing with a parrot fracture. However, if you go to other sports, there's not the same type of tolerance.
Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Late Fitness Test. That's 27 to those of you who don't speak German. Not that I sprechen Sie Deutsch much. You know, even I got that wrong. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Ben Dinry, or Mr. Athletic, Mr. Talksport, Mr. Love Sport, Mr. Anything.
You call me the doc.
McFly!
Yes, Bowen my presence.
Enough about that.
Yeah, I like to keep busy, what can I say? You got to keep your fingers in many pies. Anyway, I'm passing the crown over to Mr. Wilson.
One of the recent heirs to the throne has done one. They've done a runner. So yeah.
Yeah, well, I have to bow down to Mr. Wilson this week. He's been in overdrive, but I don't want to steal any of his thunder. I'll let the good man tell you all about it himself.
Yeah, let me introduce the one of the greatest physios the world has ever seen. His hands are better than Mr. Miyagi's. Johnny Wilson. Hello, Johnny.
Hi, gents.
Hi, Johnny.
Great to be here again tonight. And, look, you know, I've obviously had to take some time out of my busy schedule this week because I've been... giving so many newspaper interviews. Can you imagine the haters that are out there now, right now?
You've got two. Yeah, listen to you, man.
Yeah, unsubscribing. I'm not listening to this bullshit anymore. This guy thinks he's a media star now. So for all those out there who didn't know, yeah, I've been on loads of newspapers this week. Been on Talk Sport Radio, Love Sport Radio, and so haters keep on hating.
It's what drives us, Johnny.
It does, yeah. Well, no, look, you know, to be fair, right, and the honest answer is here, is that, Ben, you work 24/7, right, as does Stel, as do I, and really, and I was thinking about this going, you know, up on the train today from London, there is nothing different about me than any other physio out there, apart from the fact that I'm the world's greatest, but I'm obviously joking, right? Apart from the fact of, you know, I know Ben Dinry, so that's going to open a lot of doors for me when it comes to kind of the media. I'm always saying yes to this kind of stuff. If there's an injury and so on and so forth, and Ben gives me a shout and says, look, you know, as in Marcus Rashford has hurt his back, can you give us a little bit of insight on what, or a speculative insight into it? Then, you know, if it's 2 o'clock on a Sunday morning, going into the Monday morning, I'm writing. And it's the hard work and that gets you into any kind of place, you know. So it's a case of really kind of love what you do, you know, have a passion for what you do, which is what I have, you know, have it towards an obsession, and then try and just kind of, you know, package it in a way that hasn't been packaged before. And I think that the hard work that we do, putting on the podcast for free, nobody pays us to be on here tonight, you know, nobody pays us to do the research that we do. I mean, we've been speaking every night this week and writing every day this week. So it's lovely to be in the papers, but it's not an overnight kind of a thing. And it's, you know, the result of, you know, grinding. And I know that Ben might have an opportunity with a TV station tomorrow. And that just doesn't come down to the fact of a TV station just kind of going, oh, let's have a chat with this guy. It comes down to the fact that, you know, he's 24/7 relentless on Twitter, providing a service that nobody else is able to do. So,
checks in the post, Johnny.
Yeah,
in the post, my friend.
Absolutely. I'm very, you know, it's grateful for all the opportunities. My expectation is that we work hard. And the end goal, hopefully, is that people find this entertaining and informative and gives them an insight into injuries. And, you know, we've had some phenomenal guests on here over the last 27 episodes. I've learned so much. I've been, it's caused me to change my own practice and be more reflective, and listening back to the podcasts as well has been very helpful as well. And some of my own views have been wrong, and some of my own speculative insights have been wrong, some have been right, but that's because I'm the world's greatest physiotherapist. But no, look, you know, I'm kind of being long-winded about the whole thing here, really. I'm very grateful, intend to work harder, and hopefully get more opportunities in the press. And I'm always at the back post for Ben, really. That's all I do. I'm the fox in the box, like, you know what I mean? Anything he doesn't finish, I'm on the goal line, and I just you know, tap in at the back post. That's all I do.
Well, Johnny, let's just hope that you behave yourself, because the last person that was bragging about being the world's greatest, we know what happened to him, didn't we? R. Kelly. But anyway. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? Congratulations, Johnny. Brilliant.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Right, we are joined by a very special guest this evening. He is a fan of the show, and he's the strength and conditioning coach at Leeds Beckett University. It's Sam Cleaver. Welcome to the show, mate. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
No, all good. Apologies for making you wait this long.
No problem.
Excellent. Well, Sam, tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm sounding like Cilla Black again. I need to change things up a bit. What do you reckon, gents? I can't do the accent. Don't even ask me to. Sorry, Sam, as you were. Sorry.
So at the moment, doing my master's degree, strength and conditioning at Leeds Beckett, part-time. This week I just started my new role working with the women's football team, trying to help them kind of start establishing more of a professional kind of setup with the team, getting S&C sessions in, helping establish the team a little bit more. They have been struggling this year, so hopefully this year will just be kind of a sighter, and then next season build on it a little bit more than that. Most of my coaching background has been in rugby, but I have been interested in getting football a go a little bit more, so hopefully this is a stepping stone for me to try that.
Fantastic. And I know you studied at the University of Central Lancashire, right? And you did a bit on community work, reducing criminal activities, racism, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, one of the modules was sport in the community, and it did involve a little bit of the racism, that sort of thing, like putting particular races of people in certain sports and others in others. So mainly sending African descent people towards sprinting and athletics, and white people going more towards swimming and cycling. That's not always the common conception. It should be, everyone should be given a good fair chance, really. And that's fair to be fair, really.
Absolutely. And I know this is very much off topic, but as you're probably aware, racism is rife everywhere, and it's crept back into our game in a huge way, especially in the past couple of years. Do you see something like that happening in rugby? Because we don't really hear that much of it.
I've actually seen or heard any particular incidents in rugby with racism. To be honest, it seems like rugby seems to be a very open community. I know there has been talks mainly to do with South Africa, with all kinds of with obviously apartheid and that sort of thing. They've now changed it, so there has to be a certain quota of black players involved in the team, and that affected the level of rugby in South Africa for quite a while. But unfortunately, from the Rugby World Cup last year, it doesn't seem to have affected it too much anymore by beating us in the final. But it seems like it's going in the right direction for them now, but that's probably the only real incident. Football seems to be a bit more common, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm sure someone out there is going to think of something great to help eradicate it from the game, but as we keep saying, it's an educational thing, but we'll leave that for another podcast, I guess. Now, let's talk about injuries. There's been a couple of injuries this week. First of all, Tammy Abraham Before we ask you about it, Sam, Ben, any updates on him? I know he went down with a, it looked like an ankle injury. He hobbled, he went down again, he got back up. I was half expecting him to actually go off, but as it turns out, he stayed on the pitch and Arsenal scored. So, yeah.
I mean, you're pretty much on the money in terms of it was an ankle injury. The injury itself actually happened off the pitch. It was caused with a collision of the advertising hoardings on the perimeter. And as he went into those, his foot actually got jammed underneath. It could have been quite a serious setback. And it looks as if he's come out of that fairly well under the circumstances. Yeah, so he did try to play on. Wasn't able to, but was then helped down the tunnel at full time by the medical team, and he's been sent for a scan. Now we're probably, you know, we would expect an update on Friday ahead of the FA Cup. We certainly won't see him involved. You know, Lampard does have other options there, but at this moment, you know, we're still sort of speculating on the severity of that problem. You know, it could be that for fantasy managers, maybe if they're looking at planning, best case scenario, there may be a one game missed in the Premier League, you know, with the winter break coming up, because that comes at a good time. And that essentially would give Tammy, you know, almost 4 weeks full recovery, just missing that one Premier League game. So, you know, we'll see what Lampard has to say on Friday about that.
Mm. So, Sam, what's your take on this injury, mate?
Well, seeing it before on a match of the day, it did look like it was quite bad. And considering the state that England forward seems to be at the moment, I think really probably maybe he should have been brought off sort of straight away as a precaution to give Chelsea the chance to have someone on the pitch. Maybe it could have prevented Arsenal from scoring, and then Chelsea could have won the game. Maybe it wouldn't, but it's one of those that, especially with Chelsea being a little bit not quite at the peak power like they were a few years ago under Mourinho and Benitez and stuff like that, they haven't probably got as much pull with transfers, and whether they'll actually be able to bring people in the last week of the transfer market, they need to wrap some of the players up in Cotwell, particularly Abraham. I think he's done well this year. And if it's something that, because hearing him scream on Match of the Day, it sounded like it was pretty painful. So to risk him staying on the pitch, I don't think Lampard can really afford to do that. Really, the positioning that Chelsea are in, where they could get European football by the end of the season, is he worth risking with something that it might only be minor in the end, but making it more serious by keeping on the pitch, is it really worth it?
Sam, is as your role as a strength and conditioning coach, and we have quite a diverse listenership. You know, we have from professionals and elite level sport down to people who are just interested in fantasy football. So just in terms of your role as a strength and conditioning coach, at what point would you get involved in terms of maybe as a player's injury, you know, rehab back from injury, or is it, do you work more on preventative measures, you know, whether you're roaming in the football or particularly like the rugby that you've just came from?
Mainly really looking at getting the athletes kind of prepared for the actual physical activity, not so much on the rehab and prevention. I am starting to learn that side a little bit more. It's not something that I'm particularly well read in at the moment. It's something I'm learning more of. But definitely, if he's able to put weight on it and stuff like that at the moment, it would definitely be a case of testing him out very, very slowly over these next sort of 4 weeks, if he is going to be out, slowly bringing him back up to that level, and then maybe giving him an extra week, missing not just the next Premier League game, but the Premier League game after the... after this little mini winter break, just to give him that chance and really give him a good assessment. As Johnny said before, now every kind of sort of time that you give of a scale, if you give him that little bit longer, they have a better chance of reducing the reoccurrence rate of the injury. So especially if he's going to be a big part for the running for the end of the season, give him that extra week, just take that extra week just to give him a little bit more chance, and then he might be firing on all cylinders straight away for you.
In your experience and in your background of working within sport, and we've touched upon this many a time, you know, time is very rarely afforded, particularly to high-profile, high-status players, of which Tammy Abraham is, you know, under the current climate at Chelsea, where they don't really have another standout striker. But, you know, is that something that you've experienced where you can actually just say, well, you know, I feel this player does need a little bit extra time, therefore we're going to keep him out of a squad for this week to ensure that he comes back in a better place in 7 days' time?
Yes, I think I've... when we were coaching our... Me and my friend coaching our rugby team, I think they were about under-14s, under-15s at the time, and we were quite lucky to have two number-10s, so fly halves, in the team that were very, very good. One of the lads, I think he had an ankle injury, and he was out for a few weeks, and he was coming to training, he was testing it out, he looked good, no real problems. Me and my friend kind of made the decision just to leave him on the bench to start off with, and I don't think he came on. So we kind of explained to him that we didn't want to risk his ankle, really, because he'd only just sort of come back, but we had somebody else capable to take on the game. I think we came out with a good result anyway. So, and then the week after that, he came back in. He was a lot fresher. He was a lot sharper. So I think giving them, explaining it, especially to the players, like especially the high profile players who want to be playing all the time because they're in such good form, explaining it to them, like in the long run, this extra week could give you the rest of the season. When you come to the end of your career, it could give you an extra couple of months because this injury has had chance to heal really, really well.
Brilliant. Well, Johnny, Tammy Abraham has played 31 games in all competitions this season. We're only in January. He's 22 years old. Are you surprised that he hasn't picked up any other serious injuries? I mean, this appears to be, as far as I'm aware, his first big injury of the season.
Well, I doubt this is a big injury, because he was captured on video after the game, walking, I guess, to his car. So, you know, but he didn't have a boot on. He didn't have a protective boot. He didn't have crutches. He didn't need the aid of anybody to help him. He looked pretty confident, weight-bearing through his leg. He had a slight limp, which is called an antalgic gait. The fact that he's 22, you know, I don't know how much serious damage you can do to an ankle with the hoarding. I have seen a horrific injury with a player where he had a head injury with the hoarding and ended up with a huge amount of stitches down his face, down his, you know, across his head. And he lost his confidence from that and he just retired. So yep. I have been involved, you know, I wasn't obviously involved in the hoarding, but, you know, the player is well known to me who his career finished due to that hoarding incident. But I don't think that this is a bad game, a bad injury. Given the fact that he's played 31 games already this season, he's 22 years of age. I'd be hopeful that he's back within the next 7 to 10 days. I mean, I don't know if Chelsea could risk putting him out this weekend. Then he gets an injury, and you can imagine the speculation. Oh, we should have rested him. You know, he shouldn't have been back on. He got injured, you know, and it's the manager's fault. It's the medical team's fault, and so on and so forth. So, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So if teams are seen to be taking too much risk and it goes wrong, then everybody's on them. If they're seen to be not taking enough risk, then everybody's on them as well. So it's a case of, I think, what the fantasy managers need to realise here is that you can't be risk averse. You have to be risk aware. And even if Tammy Abraham did play at the weekend, which is highly unlikely, he might be on the bench, then it's a case of everybody is all too aware of the risks associated with a re-injury or an injury of another body part on Saturday or at the weekend. But, you know, I'm not sure that this is such a catastrophic or such a big injury or any type of injury that's going to affect his inclusion for 2020 anyway.
Fantastic. Right, let's talk about another player, one that Ben is quite familiar with, and that's Joshua Williams, however you want to pronounce it. What's up there?
All of the above.
All of the above. There you go. What you got for us, Ben?
Not good news. As probably most are aware at this point, it didn't look great against Chelsea. Non-contact ACL rupture. It effectively could mean that he's played his last game on Tyneside. Obviously, we had him on a season-long loan from Eintracht Frankfurt. Decisions and conversations are taking place as to where Willems will have his treatment, which surgeon he'll see, and ultimately, I suppose, what kind of procedure. Now, again, that'll probably be managed by his parent club and the player himself. And it's just the latest in a long line of setbacks that Newcastle have suffered this season. That followed quickly on the heels of a season-ending hamstring injury for Paul Dummett. And to note, you know, I've had a lot of questions over the last week saying, you know, it seems to be that ACL injuries are on the rise. We've had a lot this season. There must be, you know, the data, you know, the reality of the situation is they're not. It just so happens that we've had 4 ACL injuries within the space of a month, 3 this year, following on from the 2 guys from Aston Villa. And yeah, so they've all come around at the same period. But typically, in the past, what we're looking at anywhere between maybe 8, 10, 12 ruptures over the course of over a season. It has been up to somewhere, you know, the 15, 16. And inherently, we always had a big influx of ruptures in and around maybe like the September, October time. So to have none until the Callum Chambers setback in December was, fairly unique in the fact that in all of the time that I've been collecting the data, never have we went through almost the first half of the season where we haven't had at least one player sidelined with an ACL rupture. And just a note, because people might question that Leroy Sané, who is returning from an ACL injury, I'm talking about from the opening weekend, the Sané actually happened in the Community Shield charity game. So that's why he wouldn't be included in that data.
Fantastic. So, Sam, what's your take on this injury?
Trying to remember. It was against Chelsea, wasn't it? I think I remember watching it. It just looked painful, the way he went down. Just obviously no one around him. He was like screaming in agony. It's hard as well, especially because he's actually been one of the best players for Newcastle this year. I remember I support Liverpool, so watching Newcastle Liverpool at Anfield early in the year, and he scored the rocket at the first goal.
He did, great goal.
And I saw that and I thought, oh, here we go. This is going to be where Liverpool, like 10 games into the season, this is where Liverpool blow it already. Come back, but he's been such a good player for Newcastle when the likes of Almiron and Joe Linton haven't been able to perform. So now it's going to be hard for Newcastle, really. Like you say, he's only on a loan. It's not like he's a permanent player where they can really nurture him to get him back into the team, hopefully early next season instead. So because it's happened mid-January, has Bruce got time to bring somebody in just as influential? Have they got time to get in into the season and really push Newcastle forward? So, well, fingers crossed for him that it all turns out well for him. But at the same time, Newcastle will need to think of the next stage for them if he's not going to be involved in the season for the rest of the year.
Yeah. So as an SNC coach, and if a player presented or returning from an ACL injury, how would that alter the work that you would do with that player? Would you specifically concentrate on that knee to try and to build it up, or would you be looking for to create a more rounded player, or would you look to maybe strengthen other areas of the body to try and compensate for that injury?
That's a very, very good question. Since I haven't really dealt with too many ACL injuries, really, my friends have had a couple of. I've been quite lucky, touch wood, that I've never actually had any problems with my knees too much. I would probably say you would have to do a combination of all three, probably sort of varying it through the different stages of his going through the injury rehab and stuff, working on maybe very light work on the knee individually, then working on aspects of an all-round kind of thing, putting like saying simply doing a squat. Can he do it without any pressure on his knee or any pain coming through the knee? Can he do it where his body's not compensating, moving to, say, one side just to take the strain off of that knee and then moving on to onto the other thing that you mentioned, sorry, Ben, in that aspect. It's hard because I've listened to, on Johnny's recommendation, the Physical Performance Show, and I've listened to so many episodes on there. They've talked about different injuries and so many different opinions on how to manage and how to rehab injuries, and people's different opinions of when they should do it and what they should do. Really, I think it's more anything that it's your judgment call from the S&C coach, the physiotherapist themselves, but it's also you've got to really listen to the player as well. If the player doesn't feel comfortable doing it's like some sort of like knee extension, don't do it. It's fine. Okay, let's find something else we can do with you. We want you to keep going because we want to keep what we've got with you and keep a platform. But at the same time, if you are not comfortable doing it, I'm not going to force you to do it, because at the end of the day, then you're going to be discouraged from doing your rehab and it's just going to take longer for you to get back.
Absolutely. Well, Sam, before we let you go, mate, let us know your plans for the near future. What have you got in store?
Well, still at uni at the moment. Start back next week with lectures. That's going then through till about April. Summertime, hope a bit of a rest. Not that I've actually done too much this year anyway.
It's a typical student.
Well, yeah. Yeah, working through the summer, working, doing coaching and stuff. Then back next year, really go at it next year. It's dissertation time next year, and really hopefully get a good year of experience under my belt with the women's football, and then see where I go from there, really. Hopefully I'll continue with the women's football after I finish university, if they will have me on, if I do a good enough job. And just hoping that I'll find somewhere to break into sport somewhere and go with what I want to do with my career in either S&C or coaching in rugby, or if I get the opportunity to coach in football, take that on as well.
Great stuff. Well, we cool. Wish you all the best, mate. It's, as Johnny will attest, it's a very, very tricky field, and pretty sure you'll be all right.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Sam. Brilliant to have
you
on.
Thank you, Sam.
No worries. Thank you very much, guys.
Very well good. Cheers, Sam. Speak to you soon, mate.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, so who shall we talk about now? Shall we get Marcus Rashford out of the way? Because you guys have been very vocal about this fella's injury. We spoke about it last week, the potential injury that he was going to get. He picked up a knock against Man City. Apparently, Ollie reckons that he picked up a similar knock a while back. But he's continued to play. And, he dropped like a fly the other day. So, Ben, lead the way.
Marcus Rashford. We're talking about a player who allegedly went into an FA Cup replay managing a stress fracture of the lower back. Obviously being managed, loosely termed, by the club, by the medical team. You know, it's something that probably, you know, would have been flagged up or shown on scans. And why was Rashford, I'm just curious to know, why was Rashford allowed to go out first and foremost out on that pitch, and why might Ollie have used him in such a just a meaningless game in the grand scheme of things? You know, an FA Cup replay at home, you know, you've got bigger fish to fry. The team was doing all right. Mason Greenwood, you know, probably deserves his opportunity to get a full 90 minutes under his belt. But no, Ollie pulls him off and tells Rashford to go out there and do his thing. Can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, what's being discussed, what the thought process is behind that, what's the conversations, and why ultimately was he even part of that match day squad?
I suppose I can't offer any other insight into that as any of us on this call could, because it's all speculation leading up to that. Now, if you want me to guess, then
if we take Henry Winner, highly respected journalist, one would assume that the information that he has to hand is pretty solid. Now, he announced on Sunday evening that Rashford was already carrying a single fracture, lower stress fracture of the lower back. So let's just say, you know, that in your experience, knowing what you do, dealing with the players that you have done, are you putting a player out onto the pitch? Are you naming him in a matchday squad, knowing what you know of a player who maybe has had a history of back problems, who was 22 years of age, you know, who could potentially cause himself, you know, a serious setback at that time? You know, are you making that decision?
Well, I'm never making that decision in isolation or in a silo or taking the lead on that decision as a sport and exercise medicine practitioner in professional football. So that's the first thing that should be kind of said there, that in my opinion, I do not think that and I've been reading some of the quotes on the media today, you know, which have been horrendous about the sport and exercise medicine team at Manchester United. But I really don't think that they would have made that decision. They would have led the decision. So there would have been a lot of discussion. There would have been a lot of toing and froing, you know. This might have been going on. This low back pain might have been going on for a while. And in football, there's a very low tolerance for players playing with a parts fracture. However, if you go to other sports, there's not the same type of tolerance. So, I mean, diving, the sport of diving in I'm not talking about diving in the Premier League now. I'm talking about diving into high board diving. There's a high incidence of this type of pars fracture in sports like that. In cricket, a huge incidence of it. Looking at rugby and so on and so forth. So it's, you know, in those heavy contact sports. And maybe the tolerance for what players will go through and might be a little bit higher. So, again, you know, there's only guidance out there on how you should manage pars fractures. So that's some of the things that the media are missing at the moment. There's no definitive, like, this is best practice. It's guidance. And the problem with guidelines is that they're guidelines. You know,
and it's how you interpret them.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're not statutory. They're not mandatory. Not like, you know, so for example, with concussion, you know, there are mandatory statutory laws that you must follow now if you suspect somebody of concussion. It's not the same for pars. And it takes quite a while to diagnose a pars fracture as well. I mean, you're looking at somebody. I don't know. Did we have this chat? I'm not sure if we had this chat during the week. But if I'm looking at players, and let's say we've got 100 players, and they're under the age of 18 years of age, and they play soccer to a pretty high level, football to a pretty high level, and they've got 2 week history of low back pain. Out of that 100 players, about 47 to 50 of those players will have a pars fracture, but they'll have been playing on it, you know, until they get a diagnosis. And at point of diagnosis, that will be the time when they are removed from training and playing, because they might not have presented themselves to the sport and exercise medicine practitioner up until that point. If you take the same number of players over the age of 21, so 100 players who present to a sport and exercise medicine practitioner with low back pain, that play football and have a 2 week history of it, only five of those players may have a pars fracture. So your incidence of pars reduces dramatically. So the likelihood of this presenting to you is even less. There's a 95% chance that, you know, he hasn't got a pars fracture. So it's not, you know, high up on your clinical reasoning list. Now, I know I'm biased, okay, because I know what it's like to work in professional football as a physiotherapist on your own. You're trying to do everything. You're being pushed, pulled, manipulated, bullied by, you know, everywhere. And in a lot of times, it's very, very, you know, under the radar. It's very kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's very kind of, you know, a comment here or a remark there and so on and so forth. And, you know, we're all doing this for the badge and so on and so forth. But, you know, that drip feeds, that trickle feeds into any human being's thought process. Now, it's not a defendable decision making a mistake in professional sport and saying that somebody's okay when, you know, the gaffer told me that I needed to play him, or I was under a lot of pressure from the players. You can't use that as a defendable decision when it comes to medical legal issues. However, in this situation, given the fact that Manchester United have a huge number of sport and exercise medicine practitioners who are working that first team, very highly experienced, the likelihood is that, and this guy is going around with a Melmac, which is bone healing, there's more to the eye than meets this. And Marcus Rashford came out, I think, or Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came out this week as well and said, look, I've got the best sports medicine team in the world, you know, and this is post-Rashford injury. So, you know, either the player and the manager are backing the sports medicine staff, or the players backing the sports medicine staff, or the manager backing the sports medicine staff. Maybe they have to back the sports medicine staff. Maybe the player and the manager made that decision independent of the sports medicine staff, or in contrary to what the physios had said. Don't play him. The gaffer and the player have a chat, and you know, they decide that I'm going to do it for the badge. He seems like a very, very committed guy to the cause, does Marcus Rashford. He seems like a guy who bleeds Manchester United. The fans seem to love him. You know, I don't know the guy, obviously, from Adam, but from what I can see, you know, his tweets and so on and so forth, that even though he's injured now, he's going to be in at the training ground, he's going to be in the huddles, he's going to be supporting the boys, you know, even though he's not on the team sheet himself. So he sounds like, you know, he's a guy that maybe you have to pull the reins on, and, you know, he wants to play for Manchester United. He's hit the 200 mark. He's the number one guy there. You know, you're looking at somebody now who has kind of gone from a prospect to a hero.
You know, given the exposure that this injury is had and the light that it's thrown the Manchester United medical team in, and, you know, touching upon it, something that you raised, that, you know, maybe the media outlets, the broadcasters, the journalists are missing out on some key points. Do you think it could be an unprecedented action to maybe, you know, have some kind of official statement released by the club, by the medical team, to say, well, actually, this is what happened. This is a decision process. These are the protocols we followed, and this is why Rashford was in the team.
I think that's going to come to light in this situation, for sure. It will obviously have to come with the blessing, the consent of the player. So, and he will ultimately decide how much information goes out in the air, goes to the media and so on and so forth. But I think in this situation that the manager and the player owe it to the sports medicine team to make a statement of intent with regards to, we're backing the sports medicine team because of this or that. Because there's just too much going on at the moment. There's too much speculation. That's all we're doing is speculating. However, the only thing that I'm not prepared to do is I'm not prepared to blame the sport and exercise medicine team. I think you're innocent until you're proven guilty anyway. And from my experience, I'm not sure this is as black and white as everybody is, as everybody's assuming it is. I'm not quite sure that any sports medicine practitioner in the Premier League has ever made a return to play decision over the last 12 to 18 months. I think they're nowhere near it.
Johnny, this is the old adage. You never let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't think that these guys are anywhere. I think they might give a little bit of a chat and so on and so forth and all that. But the manager's making up his own mind. You know? If it's concussion, he's probably not getting his way. If it's an ACL injury, he's probably not getting his way. If it's low back pain, is he getting his way? Is that a real injury?
But if Rashford has been presenting with pain for a number of weeks, and as you say, the chances of it being caused, you know, slim to none, 1 in 20 that presents, maybe. Yeah. So what would the club then be looking for? You know, is it just a case of, look, there's an injection, there's a few tablets, get yourself out. You know, it's a minor strain or... right, comes back in the next day. How is it? That's actually, it's still a little bit sore. Can you? Yeah, I can't play, but I don't feel 100%. Is there not a duty of care there?
The duty of care is always there, right? But just because he's out training and playing doesn't mean that the duty of care is absent, right? Mm-hmm. Duty of care can take a number of forms and can look, you and I having a conversation can be a duty of care. Me transporting you or assisting you to go into the hospital is a duty of care. Me informing you of the risks of future injury is a duty of care. Me telling you that you can't go and play, it's not a duty of care. It's a case of I cannot force you not to play. Even if I tell you that, you know, you've got to make that decision as a player yourself. So the duty of care is still there. And what are they looking for? Well, I would imagine that they've X-rayed, MRI'd, CT'd, and that, you know, his back, his spine had showed changes, which, you know, might have been from previous injury. But at the time, it may have had increased, so when you're looking at the images, you're looking for increased intensity. You're looking for increased activity from the bone. So that is it doing more than it should do? So it'll kind of light up on a scan. So they're kind of looking for that. And then, you know, they're telling the player and the manager what they see in the scan. Did it or didn't it light up? Did it show any increased activity? None of us know. I in this scenario, I really can't see how anybody would tell a lie, number one. I can't see why any of the physios wouldn't just literally narrate what the findings of the MRI are, what the player is saying, and then say, look, you know, as in, look, we need to investigate, number one, for cancer. Let's rule out cancer. And let's rule out any bony injury that might lead to some kind of neurological deficit. So, you know, a Paris fracture can become unstable, and what happens then is one of the vertebrae, which are the segments in the spine, they can slip forward, impinge the nerve, which can cause sciatica and other neural symptoms. It can cause disc herniations. It can cause changes in bowel and bladder. So, you know, if it's unstable and if it slips forward, but rather than getting into the granular detail of the anatomy here, or what happens in this situation, I think that a few steps need to be taken back here, and this comes down to decision making, and the central character here will be the player. No, there'll be two central characters. There'll be the player and the manager, and then there'll be advice from everywhere else. And then it'll be, how important is this player? Would Marcus Rashford have played against Wolves if he was a fringe player at Manchester United?
Probably.
Would he, like?
Yeah,
like, let's say...
Yeah, he put, like, Mason Greenwood started.
But, like, yeah. if we're not being facetious now, right, and we're being absolutely, you know...
What you're like, saying is, if Mason Greenwood had presented with a lower back problem and said, you know, I'm not feeling 100%, would he have been risked against Wolves then?
Oh, no, I don't think he would have.
That's what I'm saying, right? The reason why Rashford was out there is because of his status in the team, not because of mismanagement from the medical department.
Shall I tell you why Marcus Rashford came on? I'll give you three reasons. Okay.
Yeah. Go on.
Okay. So you've got a very naive manager, for a start. I don't think he realised how serious this injury could have been. Whether it be miscommunication or whether, you know, Rashford has been playing through the pain barrier for a while. He's had back pains for a couple of years now. James Ducker wrote a fantastic article, I think it was a Telegraph, and he said that he's played 8 games in the last 28 days or something like that, which is incredible. The second thing is pressure. Marcus Rashford is in fantastic form. He's in the form of his life. He's been carrying United all season. And if Solskjaer didn't play him or bring him on against Wolves in an FA Cup game, which United needed to win to at least salvage something of the season, then people would be getting on Solskjaer's back. And Karen Schotbolt would be working overtime when it comes to the whole, you know, having a word in his ear. But we won't go into Karen Schotbolt because I've had enough to say about her on Twitter. And also, desperation. I mean, as I said before, he's a key player. He's in form. And there are no other options. They sold Lukaku in the summer. And they sold Lukaku for 5 million more than they expected just to make a net profit. So, you know, you can blame the player because perhaps Rashford should have said something. But do you blame him? As I said, he's in the form of his life. And, you know, you've spoken to many footballers. We've all have spoken to many footballers. And when they say they're in form, they don't want to stop playing, irrespective of their injury. You can blame the manager because you're thinking this lad is 22, 23 years old. Why are you not protecting him? You know what it's all about. So, you know, you've played at the highest level. You've scored goals in Champions League finals. Why are you not protecting this player? But again, pressure. What about the medical staff? Are they not communicating with each other? They've seen the test results prior to him picking up these injuries. They've seen him before going down with the same injury. Why haven't they said anything? What's going on? So, you know, I think this is another notch on United's shipboard, as I like to say. You know, everything is going wrong at the club, and effectively, it's the player that's suffering. And again, going back to the article that Ducker wrote, apparently Rashford did a sit down interview with Ryan Giggs at Hotel Football, and he couldn't sit down for a certain period of time.
That's a bit dramatic now, in fairness, because how many times have any of us got up from sitting down and gone, oh, me Union Jack's in bits, me Union's in bit, me Union Jack, and you just need to stand up. But that doesn't mean any of us are walking around with an unstable pars fracture. The amount of times that you will have seen in your life people going, Jesus, me back, you know, getting up, walking around, will be, you know, I would say thousands of times. But you won't automatically go, oh my God, you've got a pars fracture, you better go to hospital straight away. You might end up with, you know, as in bowel and bladder dysfunction, you might end up with a disc herniation. They've got a stiff back. They got up from doing an interview. The guy was probably training that day. He's got ongoing back issues. How many times has he got up with a stiff back from sitting down, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times before that? You know, as in, I read that part from what Ducker had written. I thought, come on, lad, you're really sensationalising this part of it now, for fuck's sake.
So what about where he put Stan that he's been using a Melmac device? I don't know what that is. I don't know if that means anything.
It's a sort of bone healing. Well, it's an electrotherapy device that is the theoretical framework is that it helps with bone healing, so it speeds up the metabolic activity, or it optimizes metabolic activity within the bone, or it does something like that. Anyway, it's sketchy at best. Anyway, whether it does anything or not, but again, you're a professional footballer. You've got low back pain. You've used it before. You've said to the physios, you know what? Can I use that? I know I don't have a pars fracture. I know I don't have anything like that, but I just feel it helps me. So, you know, they get it. They get whatever they want. they get whatever they want. There are so many psychosocial reasons, yellow flags. You know why do all the footballers wear the tape? You know, the red and blue and
the
yellow tape.
The
kinesio tape. It's because it makes them feel better. It makes them, you know, when they look good, they play good. It does nothing. I'm going to get absolutely slaughtered now from all the kinesio people out there. In my limited experience as a kinesiologist as well. It does nothing. I don't think from a physical tissue point of view. However, it's got huge results when it comes to, you know, the mindset, the confidence, owning it, sending it, being able to go out there and kind of going, you know what, I feel okay now. And that's all really any of us are. We're just kind of, you know, we're on the back of our emotions. If we're having a good day, we're having a good day. Everything's going right. We're able to manage stress. We're able to cope with it. If we're having a bad day, then, you know, the little things can kind of really challenge us. And it's, you know, so the Malmic machine is there and helps him psychologically. He's probably said to the physio, I know it probably doesn't work, but, you know, in my own mind, I feel it helps. And if a player says that to me, I'll say, away you go, lad, no bother at all. I understand that there are things that I do that make no sense, but psychologically they help me.
All right, well, answer me this then, because I'm intrigued about this whole situation. After the Liverpool game, Ollie said it's normally 6 weeks to heal, but I'm not a doctor. So who's telling Solskjaer that the lad is going to take 6 weeks to heal? And on top of that, when Van Persie's coming out saying they had a similar injury at Arsenal, was out for 4 months.
Okay, so I'm not going to break patient confidentiality here, but I am reviewing a professional footballer right at this moment, right, and a high profile one, and he's been given a 6 week return to play time frame. That's why he's coming to see me. But and he's got, you know, I suspect it's a similar injury to, I know exactly what injury he's got, but I would expect Rashford has got the same injury, and he's been given a 6 week return to play time frame. So he wants a second opinion from me.
Is it position dependent?
Well, yes, there are five types of pars fractures as well. So, you know, there's a dysplasia. So no neonate is ever born with a pars fracture. They occur, and they might occur because, you know, of genetic congenital defects. It might be a degenerative disc or a spine which can cause weakness in the pars, or it can be. There's a study from 1976 which has shown in extreme circumstances, trauma can cause the pars to fracture as well. But mostly it's a type 2 for professional footballers. So it's repetitive high cyclic loads. So you're kicking hyperextension. So when you bend back your back, or when you arch your back, and if you're doing that time and time again, you're turning, you're arching backwards, you're doing explosive movements, and you continue and continue and continue, well, then the pinch point is the pars. That's the weakest part of the vertebra. And that's the one that starts off with, you know, taking the most amount of stress. So that's why we call it a stress reaction. And then that stress reaction, then it just kind of exceeds its physiological load and it fractures. So it might be a stable fracture, so the vertebra doesn't move. And then, yeah, there's a pars on the left side of the spine and on the right hand side of the spine. Then if both of the pars fractures, then it might become unstable, and that's when that vertebrae, that little segment, can slip forward and impinge on the nerve or cause a disc bulge, or then cause any of those sciatica or bowel or bladder symptoms which I had explained earlier.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So shall we move on to a couple more other injuries before we wrap out? Because we've gone close to an hour now. It's pretty impressive, to be fair.
Hit me up, Stel. Hit me up.
Okay. Jamie Vardy. Apparently, it's not a hamstring injury, but he hurt his bum.
Apparently so. Obviously, the concerns when he pulled up, we talk about high profile, high status. We talk about Leicester City, and it's Jamie Vardy. and it looked like a hamstring. He grabbed the back of his thigh, and it didn't look good. So fantasy managers were initial concerns were, you know, how many games he's going to miss. And Brendan Rodgers has come out and he sort of played it down post match. He said that it definitely isn't his hamstring; it's more to do with his glute. And again, he'll be sent for a scan, and we may have an update ahead of this weekend's FA Cup match. But if it, you know, in I think we've had this discussion recently, Johnny, and we spoke about Marcus Alonso, Dwight Gayle. Both clubs in those instances reported glute injuries. And when I queried that with yourself, what you said was, well, you thought it might be unlikely that it was an injury to the glute, and it could still be a high hamstring problem. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it can be a gluteal tendinopathy or a high hamstring tendinopathy. These are usually what occur in the glute. Like, you know, it's not unheard of to have a glute muscle tear. But less likely. I mean, as in your injury incidents, let's just take the last 10 years, for example, Ben. How many glute reported injuries, time loss injuries? And if it was a glute reported time loss injury, I would imagine it would have to be over 10 days.
I think we're talking about one hand here, specifically for glute. They just don't get reported. The injuries may have occurred, but they just don't get reported as glutes. And specifically, it's the Marcus Alonso one that springs to mind. There's been two separate reported incidents, both exceeding 10 days, and Steve Bruce with the Dwight Gayle one. But that preempted, that came just a week before Dwight Gayle suffered quite a serious hamstring setback, which is probably going to mean he's going to miss around about 6 weeks. So that's
are you saying that Dwight Gayle had his glue issue and then tore his hamstring?
Yes.
Let's be honest, that was most likely the initial insult was a hamstring insult.
Yes. Yeah.
And not glute as reported.
Yes.
So let's speculate and dismiss that one as a glute one. And I would say that, you know, this is probably new in your injury incidents that you're hearing the glute now, compared to maybe, well, the last 10 seasons.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so.
A little information can be dangerous sometimes, and the media and players and so on and so forth. They give a little bit more information, and that can be a little bit confusing as well. It's not impossible, but, you know, unusual. And unusual to have had so many glute injuries in the last few weeks as well. You know, if you think that it was a pretty silent part of the body up until now.
Yeah.
Do you know? Funny one. It'd be interesting to follow it up. I'll follow it up on a social media speculative point of view, and maybe have a look at glute injuries in football from a research point of view as well.
I think it's interesting. And talking about just the terminology, and I've seen quite a recent shift in towards anything that seems to be groin-related, adductor, anything like that. You know, managers were fairly specific, but now everything's reported as a hip injury, whether it's thigh, whether it's groin, whether it's adductor, it's hip. And I found that this season, more than ever, managers are just defaulting to that very thing. And I just don't know the reason why. I don't know where that's come from or whether it's a little bit of a trend. Whether they're meaning hip flexor. That was just something I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, I think it's probably got to go down the route of the American, the NFL kind of route, where they give you exactly what the injury was, and then an expected, you know, time frame for return to play or time loss, and then they tell you you know, that the player is going for a scan, or, you know, and they give you weekly updates on the injuries and so on and so forth. So I think it's about time that the Premier League, you know, engaged with, you know, yourself, I guess, and really kind of said, right, well, actually, do you know what? To end all the speculation, let's systemise this, you know?
Do you think we will ever have that level of transparency?
Yes, I do, yeah. I do. Injuries are part and parcel of the sport now. This player confidentiality in professional sport is impossible. You know, it's impossible. You've got a player who's been injured on television. You come off, you do your assessment with him, and then there are lads coming in, milling in and out of the treatment room, and you think you're maintaining player confidentiality. Nonsense.
And what about, we had to see the incident earlier in the season with Gareth Bale at Real Madrid, where he sought an injunction against the club actually announcing what his injury was and why he was sidelined. You know, can players look to retain the power in this relationship and say, well, I tell you what, you know, I'm going to ensure that you don't disclose any of my injuries, if that was to be enforced by the Premier League?
Well, I mean, so all of a sudden it's not okay, which is what patient consent is, right? So you can always revoke your consent even in the middle of. So if you get injured, Ben, and I'm assessing you and I ask you for consent at the start to say, look, you know, are you happy for me to carry out this test? Are you happy for me to tell the manager? And then 5 minutes later you decide, you know what, I'm not happy for this to continue anymore and I don't want to tell the manager. You can revoke your consent. So Gareth Bale is totally in his rights to, you know, medically legally revoke his consent for the club to say anything. But he didn't do that a couple of years ago, or the last time he was injured, or the time before that. It's now that he's just got, you know, he's got the hump with the club, and now he's decided, oh no, you can't say this about me, you can't say that about me. So I think that's a bit of a fucking joke, don't you?
There you go.
Pick the boards out of that.
There you go.
Put it nicely.
Right. A couple more injuries. Harry Winks, that seems to be an important player for Jose Mourinho, and Saar at Watford.
Harry Winks is a concern. Post-match on Wednesday evening, Jose Mourinho met the press. Specifically, when he was asked for an update, he said that he hadn't met with the club doctor because he didn't want any bad news, and he didn't want to go into the press conference with a sad face. However, after that post-match press conference, I think it was Dan Fitzkilpatrick from the Evening Standard bumped into Mourinho, and he was told that it's not a crazy injury, but he's expecting weeks rather than months. That's good news on that front, especially when with the likes of maybe Moussa Sissoko out until April, Tanjai and Dembele. You know, he's not firing at all cylinders, and he's also had his injury problems. So, excuse me. I think we're looking at a couple of weeks for Harry Winks, but you know that's a positive considering the worth he has, and it looked to be pretty bad. At first glance.
Fantastic. And Saar at Watford?
Nothing of you know, in terms of a major update from Nigel Pearson. We had nothing prior to the game, the FA Cup match at Tranmere, and I suppose the hope would have been that Watford would have been playing again in their fourth round tie, but lost this evening down at, I think it's still Prenton Park. We know it's hamstring, we know it's soft tissue, but we don't know a great deal more than that. You know, in terms, and yeah, he was an FPL player in form. You know, typically, everybody wants a return date. Everybody wants to know, you know, is he going to miss this game? Is he going to be playing? You know, typically, we always tend to default to, you know, maybe 14 to 21 days until the clubs provide some kind of, you know, flesh on the bones, as it were. And hopefully we'll have that official update from Watford, you know, very soon.
Splendid. Right, I think we should wrap it up, gents. What do you reckon? With a little bow on the top as well.
It's getting late. And some of us need our beauty sleep more than others. Uh-huh. So I think Johnny has to go.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you for listening. It's been another very, how shall we say, eventful show. It's been an eventful show.
Informative.
Informative. He's gone full Porky Pig on us.
Fuck's sake.
It is late.
God knows what me new whoop bracelet's going to be saying about this. Me lack of sleep and optimum training levels.
Your whoop.
Whoop.
Oh dear. Right. Twitter handles, anything like that, Johnny?
YouTube page, Nottingham Physio. I would be delighted if anybody would like to subscribe. I put up some videos on rehab and rehab ideas and so on and so forth. And tomorrow night we are hosting our first Harley Street the podcast. So myself, Stel and Ben are making an appearance there with some other internationally renowned physiotherapists. They're obviously not the world's greatest physiotherapist, but me.
Go, Ben.
My Twitter handle is @BenDinnery.
Superb. Well, we're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. If you have any questions, anything you'd like to pose the gentleman, we're here for that. Thank you to Sam again for joining us. Really wish him well with his studies, because I know how difficult it is. I'm sure we all do. We all know how difficult it is at that stage of your life. But hey, put the beer down and hit those books, mate. So until next time, take care of everyone and each other. Bye. Bye.